The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Thursday, the 12th of September, 2019. On the podcast today, I have Nick Lee, Investment Director at Riverfort Global Opportunities. RGO is the ticker there. And Nick talks through their interim results and explains their investment strategy. Plus, I also have on Vadim Alexander, Head of Healthcare. SP Angel discusses Hemogenics as HEMO. Plus, Chris Bailey, founder of Financial Orbit, talks about Lloyds, N. Brown, Morrison's, and British American Tobacco. Plus, as always on the podcast, I like to highlight two lists. They are the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. Basically, these are people adding them to watch lists, doing research, maybe even investing in them. Always worth looking, because it's data flow, it's money flow almost. So check that out on the front page. Top 10, you can see there at voxmarkets.co.uk. Plus, the top five most liked RNSs too. News released today for these companies. People have hit that thumbs up button when they've received this RNS via the app. So check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk. And by all means, if you honestly get a company, an RNS from our app, and you like it, hit that thumbs up button, and it may feature on the top 10 on the front page at voxmarkets.co.uk and also on the podcast.
Want to keep up to date with all the companies in your portfolio? On the free Vox Markets app, you can create multiple watch lists and get instant news alerts about any company you follow. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Nick Lee, Investment Director at Riverfort Global Opportunities. It's RGO ticker. Nick, thanks for joining me again.
Great. Well, good to be here, Justin.
Yeah, well, listen, you've just released your interim results for the 6 months ended the 30th of June, 2019, yep. And a decent set of results. We'll dig into those in a bit. Before we do, Nick, if someone's saying, I've never heard of this company, Riverfort Global Opportunities, what's it all about? Summarise it, please, if you could.
Yeah, so basically what we do is we sort of invest and provide funding to principally junior listed companies. Could be on AIM, ASX, the TSX. They're generally listed rather than unlisted. And we tend to do that, rather than do that via equity, we tend to do it through a debt structure, which we believe is a sort of lower risk way of investing in these sort of smaller companies. So that's in a nutshell what we do.
Yeah, so give us an example. So normally, like I said, investment companies would take part in a placing. They take some shares, and obviously that's poses a bit of risk because you need the shares to go up pretty much. So how does it work with that? How do you do this?
Yeah, so basically what we will do, so we work closely with our investment advisor, who are Riverfort Global Capital Limited, and they will sort of tend to source the opportunity and structure it. So, you know, the sort of structures we're talking about, it could be a sort of mezzanine type loan where the company has an option either repaying cash or converting to equity, or it could be a more conventional convertible type instrument, or, you know, in certain circumstances we can do more traditional, you know, for the bigger company, certainly more traditional term type loans. So it's a bit of a mix, but the key is there's pretty much most of the time a sort of debt element to it, which sort of gives us greater protection as an investor.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
Why it's attractive to, you know, the sort of the end user, as it were, is that, you know, we've got sort of cash available to invest. So if a company needs money, you know, relatively quickly, or at a point when it might otherwise do a placing, but market conditions aren't quite right, we can provide that funding very quickly. Gives the company lots of flexibility, so it might say, well, you know, we think we might like to do a placing in a couple of months' time, we could do the money now, so they can take on one of our facilities and then, you know, take it out or repay it or raise their equity at precisely, you know, the best time, optimum time for the company. Yeah. So it provides a lot of flexibility.
Yeah, yeah, okay, cool. Well, let's go into some of the highlights here. From the 6 months ended the 30th of June, seems quite a decent performance.
Yeah, it does. And I mean, you know, the 2018 was very, very much a sort of transition year as we're moving from more equity focused to debt focused. That, you know, it's not a 5-minute job, but we've sort of pretty much got there from the beginning of this year. And so, you know, these results reflect a position where we're sort of doing mainly what we set out to do, which is this sort of debt structure type investing. And as you can see, you know, we've made a very healthy profit for the first 6 months, over £400,000. And importantly, you know, that's sort of true cash profit, as it were, because it's supported pretty much by cash that we've generated over the period. You know, we've grown net assets a little bit. We've managed to continue to de-risk the investment portfolio. So, you know, most of it now is basically either debt type instruments or cash. And we've still got a decent amount of cash available to invest. So, you know, a pretty good set of results, I would say.
Yeah, and your net asset value per share is 50% premium to the period end share price, which is decent.
Yeah, and I think that's you know, the company is not a straightforward company to understand from the sort of lay reader, but once it is explained, you know, it's a really quite, you know, it's an attractive investment opportunity for people. And as you say, it's trading at a pretty big discount to its NAV, which is a very solid NAV.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? You know, say investment companies traditionally, they need success in the companies they invest in. And investing is a hard game. And for reasons we don't often see, you know, the companies you invest in can be, you know, something can come out of left field, a black swan event, something, upset operations. Yeah. And so it's a lot of risk they're involved in small cap stocks. But when you take on a debt facility like this, or they do, then you're going to get your money back, aren't you, pretty much, you know?
Yeah, or we can, you know, we're just in a better position if something unexpected. It does happen. We're sort of just in a better position to deal with it, and you know, and we're pretty sort of bespoke in terms of the facilities we offer. So, you know, we're very keen to, you know, work closely with the company that we invest in, and you know, what's quite interesting is that we get quite a lot of repeat business, which demonstrates that what we're providing to companies is attractive, and that we're, you know, sensible investors to work with.
Yeah, absolutely. And so looking forward, Nick, what, more of the same, is it?
I think so. I mean, we've, you know, as I say, we've got a very solid first half, so we will sort of continue to, you know, invest. There are lots of opportunities out there which, you know, as markets become perhaps more difficult or more uncertain, you know, we're, because of the sort of cash that we have available, we're in a very good position to, you know, to deploy that money in attractive opportunities. So the idea is really just to continue what we're doing, you know, continue investing, develop our profitability, you know, with a view, once we're sort of, you know, we've got to that stage, you know, trying to build the capital that we have under management.
Yeah, and you've got just over $2 million in cash in which to invest. Yeah,
and that's because, you know, again, with these sorts of investments, you know, you often will provide the funding, and then because of the you know, the sort of debt type nature, they will often amortize, and so you'll get the, you know, your principal back over the period of the investment, which is quite attractive.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, Nick. Well, if someone's listening and likes the sound of this, but are not yet following the story, just give them those three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
Okay, so, you know, we're a very attractive way, I think, to for smaller investors to invest in the junior company space in a more low risk way. You know, we're at a significant discount to our NAV, so there's an attractive value option there for people. We're steadily growing our net asset value and growing our profitability.
Marvellous stuff, Nick. Good to chat to you. Hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Excellent. All right. Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Vadim Alexander, Head of Healthcare at SP Angel. You all right, Vadim?
Yeah, good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. You know, it's It's the start of the week. I think we've changed. The weather's gone from summer all of a sudden. We're now in autumn stroke winter at the moment, but hopefully it'll pick up. But let's talk about stocks. So what are you looking at?
So yeah, today I'd like to talk about a company called Hemogenics. Mm-hmm. They're a standard listed company on the LSE. Ticker is HEMO.
Yes. Well, do you know what? I've forgotten the chap's name now, but the main man there, when they first listed, he came on the podcast a couple of times. Let me just find out what's his name there. Vladislav, wasn't it? That was his
That's
name.
Right.
Yes, he's been on the podcast a few times way back when they first listed. Go on, give us a summary. What do they do, Hemogenics?
Okay, so this is a preclinical drug development business in the area of blood-based diseases. So things, such as bone marrow transplants is their primary area. Another area is AML. So it's blood-based cancers. So they're doing research and trying to develop drugs for that area.
Okay, and where are they at the moment? What's happening?
Yeah, so why we like this company is because it really has more than just one angle. So there's multiple... shots on goal, as we say. Yeah. And they're not only in drug development, they've also developed a tool for drug development, which is their mouse model. And that's gaining a lot of commercial traction and interest right now, too. So a couple of things is one, it's not just a one drug company. Mm-hmm. So that's important in terms of risk diversification, but also it's the fact that they've attracted a lot of commercial interest already, not just for their drugs, but also for the tools that they're using to develop those drugs.
Yeah, tell us about this. It's a human mouse model thing. It's because I haven't read about this. Tell us about this.
Yeah. So one of their divisions is this tools company that I was describing. Mm-hmm. So what they've done is they've developed a human immune system in a mouse. And that's actually quite important because, as we know, it's very difficult to model the immune system of a human in terms of preclinically. So when you want to bring a drug into clinic, you get sometimes a lot of surprises in terms of how the human reacts to it it's how the human immune system reacts to it. Mm-hmm. So what they've done is they've effectively replicated, or it's the best, one of the better mouse models that we have that replicates the human immune system. And that the most important element of that is that they're dealing with big pharma companies that have taken an interest in this. One, namely, is Johnson & Johnson. Mm-hmm. So these are big names. So they're working with them to develop these models for specific indications. For example, lupus, which is an autoimmune disorder, which is a disorder of the immune system. They're looking to develop specific indications with specific companies. They have other partnerships in place as well, unnamed large pharma companies. But I guess the key point being is that, one example is Johnson & Johnson. There are others, and there are probably more to come. Another thing that's interesting about that division, that sub, is that a company called Orgenesis, which is a NASDAQ-listed business, has invested into that business. They've put $1 million into it in a convertible loan that has an implied valuation for that subsidiary of, I believe it's $8 million. There's value in that business.
Yeah. And so with drugs, though, I mean, where are they at with the drugs developing? And of course, when you go through a traditional sort of, phase 1, 2, and 3, it's quite expensive, isn't it? So where are they with these?
Yeah, so basically, that's one division, right? So that's mm-hmm. important. They have this tools business. Yep. It's generating income. They have two other divisions, okay? Yeah. One is the drugs business, which is the one that's in their main area. And what they're doing there is they're in an area that's actually quite hot right now, for lack of a better way of putting it. It's the area of bispecific antibodies. So the bispecific element is that it brings a part of your immune system close to a target, and then the immune system, here in this case it's a T cell, it's what attacks the target. So you're attacking certain cells with your own immune system, hence the bispecific nature. It's a very, very big area right now in pharma research, and a lot of pharmaceutical companies are quite interested in it. So where they have a partnership in place here as well. Again, an unnamed major partner, but it's the way it's described is it's a multi-billion-dollar pharmaceutical company that is now looking at various clones of these bispecific antibodies that they've developed mm-hmm. to bring into clinic. Should they decide to in-license one of these to then take forward into clinic, the pharma company would take care of all the costs and all the advancing of the programs, and they'd pay a royalty and have them, you know, you'd have a typical biotech type deal where there's an upfront payment, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So that's, in terms of news flow, that we expect, you know, sometime in the next quarter, and we'd hope to hear the outcome of those discussions. So that's their drug development business. Elsewhere, they have another division, which is a cell therapy business. Again, you remember how I mentioned Orgenesis invested into the mouse business. Mm-hmm. Here they've invested, again, another $1 million in a convertible loan note that gives it an implied value of, I believe, $12 million. I may get I may have had the two subs swapped. So it's $12 million implied value of one, $8 million implied value of the other one. But the most important bit here is that you have a business putting money into these subs, which has the combined implied value is $20 million, which is twice the current market cap of the business. That business is what they would like to do eventually is replace the need for bone marrow transplants and provide these cells to individuals to replace that. And that would be a big area. That sub is probably the earliest stage of the three, but obviously it's already attracted some commercial interest. And what the plan there is that their Orgenesis is actually on the ground in Belgium. They're planning to open a facility there and apply for European grants that might be substantial in size. So, you know, there's going to be news flow, I think, from this company from all three fronts. So the drug development front, the mouse model front, and the cell therapy front. And then, you know, again, you know, if you consider the valuation that Orgenesis invested in this business, it's, you know, it seems to be undervalued because the Topco, which is listed here in London, its current market cap is, I think it's sub 10 million.
And so as far as you say, you know, revenue and, you know, continuing to go, I mean, are they getting revenue from these deals? Are they enough to go on or for operations to cover operations costs?
Yeah. So no, they don't. So very good point. The business, relatively speaking, so compared to other drug development businesses, it's probably one of the lesser cash burn businesses I've ever seen. It's that they're burning very little cash. Mm-hmm. It is growing because they are advancing, you know, but nevertheless, it's nothing like, you know, the big drug development programs that we've seen in the past that, you know, burn hundreds of millions of pounds. Where they're at is their mouse model business is generating income and that's growing. That hopefully will see them clinch a few more Johnson & Johnson style deals. And the ambition of the company is to indeed get them to a group cash neutral stage from that business alone. And then potentially from the grants that they get in the cell therapy business. But all things considered, you know, it is still a drug development business. That's their primary objective here, which is the bispecific antibody, and that costs money. So they are right now currently burning cash, although nothing astronomical when you compare it to other businesses.
Yeah, and is there a sort of a big milestone approaching you can talk of?
Yeah, so basically the outcome of that main partner deal on the bispecific. So they are working together with them. You know, it's not just a partnership that's a flimsy partnership. It's one where the partner has to decide whether or not they're going to in-license the program. If they do, it would be a major piece of news flow for the business because then they would already have licensed their first program. Other news flow, you know, is further deals on the mouse model and the kickoff of their Belgian facility on the cell therapy model. And that one, you know, could surprise as well, because if they, you know, file for a big grant, it could be in the millions. So, you know, but that's further down the line. But I think what I really like about this business is if you compare to other preclinical businesses, they're way ahead. I mean, they have agreements with the likes of Johnson & Johnson and others, and they have multiple agreements in place across three businesses, all of which provide some revenues in some cases, or a fallback if the lead programs don't work, you know, and diversified types of businesses as well. So for a preclinical business sub 10 million market cap, you're looking at a pretty good, in my opinion, a good relatively de-risked play. has huge upside, and which, you know, the someone in the market or Genesis has valued at substantially higher than its current value.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvelous stuff. Hemos, ticker there, Hemogenics. So give us those three quick reasons then, Vadim, why someone should hit that follow button on their page and add them to their watch list, please.
So, yeah. So the big reason is the diversification of a preclinical business. Mm-hmm. You know, with that comes a fallback if something goes wrong in one of the businesses. So good diversification for an earlier stage drug development business. The amount of news flow that's to come, which is very positive, you know, in the sense that, you know, a lot of these companies take a long time to generate news flow. This company has a lot of angles which it can generate from. So, you know, we expect to hear a lot from this business. And one piece of news flow being the outcome of those discussions with their lead partner. That, you know, it is binary. You never know. You know, the deals sometimes happen, sometimes they don't. But if it does happen, it will be a major deal. There's no other way about it. I mean, they would be in licensing the program. And then finally, we think this is good value at these levels. You know, stock price has come off slightly recently. And, you know, I just think, given that Orgenesis, one of their partners, one of their many partners, has valued them at, you know, an implicit value of $20 million between the two subs, by the way. That's, remember we said there's three businesses here. Only two of those businesses are worth to Orgenesis about $20 million. And the current market cap is about $10 million. Mm-hmm. So, you know what I mean? It doesn't even include the lead program, which is the bispecific asset, the one that we're expecting news flow on soon, in that valuation that Orgenesis. So, you know, I do believe it's undervalued.
Yeah.
So, you know, good diversified preclinical business, a lot of news flow to come, and undervalued in our opinion.
Marvelous stuff. Vadim, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch you up again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks a lot.
Excellent. Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com. You all right, Chris?
Yeah, very good. Thanks, very good.
Cool. Now, do you know what? Let's dig into some banks. Do you know what? The other day, and I saw that there were, was it Lloyds or someone, I think, or Barclays? And Lloyds, they were cutting the dividend because of the PPI surge, the last surge. Is that right?
They not quite. You've got half the story.
Okay. What so Lloyds did was that's normally better than I normally get.
No, they what they said is they were going to stop the share buyback. They're going to stop the share buyback. Because the PPI cost sort of recovering slowly. Hearing that words, but what was interesting to me was that the share went up on that news, and I think the share went up. I mean, it was kind of a fascinating statement because what Lloyd said was, you know, we've got to be prudent, we've got to put some extra money aside, but we actually think the quality of these recent PPI things, because don't forget PPI, obviously it was the final date. What was it, the 29th of August? You have that silly Arnold Schwarzenegger head advert kind of omnipresent on the screens and stuff like that. They reckon that the quality was actually pretty low, and I wonder whether ultimately the level of provisioning is actually too high. But I think that was partly the reason why shares in Barclays as well went up. Barclays, people thought, yeah, they're being so prudent now, and this is it. This is it, you know, line drawn under this. You know, it can't get any worse. There's some other bog up that the banks are going to make now, but it's not going to be PPI, at least.
Yeah. I just genuinely thought when I saw that, I thought it was worth diving into. And other banks have been beaten up. And I know, you know, for a long time, everyone's worried about the financial situation of Brexit and global worries. But they've been so beaten up, the banks. And Lloyds is at, like, I'm looking now, recently, at 48 pence. It hit that in December sell-off. It's like, is this a good floor? And again, if you go back further, 2016, it's another sort of dip this level. But it's always a bounce from this level, you know? I'm thinking, is it time to take a bit of a stake in the banks? I mean, the only one, the time we went low in that was 2011, when it went down to sort of 30 pence. But we're still coming out of that financial crash, aren't we, I suppose? You know?
Yes. Yeah, I like them. I am a shareholder in a bunch of the banks, Barclays, RBS, etc. I like them here. I tell you why I think they've done a bit better over recent days. Yes, the PPI stuff, it might be drawing a line under it, they move on. But actually there's a bigger game here. And it's this whole debate about market rotation. Because the thing is, what has really driven not just the UK market, but global markets over the last little while. And what it is this sort of great faith either in technology stocks or alternatively bond proxies. So these are things such as the consumer staple stocks, which have had high dividend yields. They've looked attractive versus sort of bonds. Obviously, you've had falling bond yields with very low interest rates and stuff like that. And people have kind of moved into those, en masse. And what's been left behind are sort of the classic kind of cyclical commodity financial areas that, in quotes, value stocks, they've been ignored. Now, just recently, literally is the last couple of weeks, there's been a bit more interest, a bit of rotation into those other areas. Maybe there's a bit of hope that the world trade stuff is going to get a bit better. Maybe there's a bit of hope that central banks can help us all out by doing wacko things such as more stimulus and stuff like that. Or maybe it's because people see the light at the end of the tunnel on Brexit. Who knows? But some combination of those issues seems to have induced a bit of a bid for that sort of financials, value, even sort of energy commodity areas. So I think the banks have benefited a bit from that, and I'm sure that news at the margin re PPI sometimes, as with a very sort of final profit warning, everything's priced in. And actually the share rises on what nominally appears to be bad news. So I like it. An area to watch. I think they're offering a bit of value.
Yeah. Do you know what? I hold an ETF in just a high dividend paying fund. It's the FTSE 350 highest dividend payers. And it's had a big rally of late. It literally, the yield is about 7% annually because it's had a big sell-off of late. But it's almost like people are searching for yield, aren't they? I mean, bonds are no longer viable. And in the last, I'd say, 20 sessions, it's rallied by 9% off its lows. And it's obviously just, it's the X day today, and it hasn't fallen that much, really. And I think, are people just generally searching for yields, you think, in our dividends?
Yeah, well, I think it's this rotation, because if you go one step below and have a look at the constituents, I bet it's a bunch of banks, retails, house builders, construction companies, that sort of bag, basically. Yeah. And these are the areas which are benefiting from that rotation. So sure, the headline yield is attractive and surely will be an attraction. But we know that. We know that these headline yields have been lurking around at seemingly attractive levels in a bunch of FTSE 350 stocks for a while. But as I say, I think there's a slight change of focus. Market is looking a bit broader. And it's all ultimately linked, I think, big picture to the fact that, we've got some stuff going on, as I say, with things like world trade and maybe even QE or people kind of thinking about different stuff. So I think that's helpful. Yeah, I think, for want of a better phrase, such value is good value at the moment.
Yeah, cool. Marvellous. What companies are coming up with the news today, Chris?
Well, why don't we stick just very briefly with the PPI stuff again and look at N Brown. Now, it's not a company that, not particularly a clear name in terms of what they do. The ticker is BWNG, which you probably wouldn't have guessed at first hat. But N Brown, obviously, it's now predominantly, I think, online as a retailer. It offers sort of a range of sort of clothing and footwear, and it tends to look at sort of people outside the mainstream in terms of their sizing. So a lot of sort of larger people would
larger than life people
naturally to have a look at their larger than life people, absolutely, and hopefully, I guess, from an N Brown perspective, larger than average budgets as well, but you never really know.
Looking at big waist, big wallet.
you said it, Justin. Not a political slogan. I don't think it's going to be particularly successful. But hey, who knows? But what's been interesting is that they've actually struggled, N Brown, to be honest. It's obviously a competitive marketplace per se. They came out with a bit of a shocker today, though. The shares are down when I last looked about 5-6%, and flirting again with a quid, which has been a little bit of a sort of a rough support area for the shares over recent times. But the share's been as high as sort of 150 this year, but as low as sort of just a little bit under a quid. And what they've said is that their PPI claims, they've had to up their PPI provisions as well because of the fear concerning lots of new inquiries from people saying that they were missold stuff. So clearly, obviously, any retailers potentially are exposed to this as well in terms of selling practices and insurance products and other stuff. So a little bit of a surprise there, but yeah, not been taken well by the share at all.
No, so again, it's like, do you know, look at the chart, it's not very encouraging. So it's bouncing off a higher low, but it's 80 pence, £1. But it looks like back in, what, £3.60 back in October last year. It hasn't, it literally, when everyone had that sell off and rebounded, it didn't happen for Enbrown. They just went down from October last year from £3.60 down to £1 now. Wow.
Yeah, no, it's been a competitive marketplace. You know, they've had profit warnings, change of management, all sorts of stuff like that. But yeah, and now, you know, the final indignity of a PPI provision kind of sort of warning. They said debt would be higher and obviously the provision per se would be higher too. So not good news for them. But yeah, I must admit, I'm not rushing. Not rushing to either buy their products or pick up the shares.
Yeah, cool. Any other news from companies, Chris?
Well, yeah, Morrisons, obviously the supermarket chain, came out with their interim numbers. They looked a little bit shocking headline on the basis that quarter two like-for-like sales were down 1.9%. But this is the question of kind of digging into the detail a bit. And of course, you'll recall that quarter two last year was that wonderful sort of barbecue summer. All the supermarkets made out like bandits. I mean, they did wonderfully well. And Morrisons actually had a 6% like-for-like quarter back then, back in quarter two, 2018. So unsurprisingly, the comparisons are very tough. So the minus 1.9% should be kind of put into that context. Across the half one overall, sales were slightly up. More importantly, profits, cash flow, dividends, all of those, you know, really important metrics also, they went up a lot, but it was up sort of 4-5-6%, quite workable. Comments look good. They're hooking up with people like Amazon. They're pushing out in convenience. They're doing all the right things, Morrisons. And, you know, it's a tough old food retail market. We know that Morrisons have also got to deal with, you know, German discounters, what Sainsbury's strategy going to be going forward after their failed merger with Asda, etc. The big beast Tesco's, of course, lurking there too. But I have to say, Morrisons are doing a pretty sensible job. I can't, hand on heart, say the shares are unbelievably super cheap. They're trading around about £2 at the moment. They're sort of sideways to down over the last year. But, you know, you're getting paid 3.5% dividend yield, a bit more with the special dividend they pay as well. It's all right. You know, it's the sort of thing which probably in your aforementioned value ETF is probably lurking there in sort of 25th position or something of the holdings. And it's fine. I mean, whether you'd desperately want to buy the share here is another question. I think you can probably find better things to be doing. But if you hold it, I would chill. I think it's looking in reasonable nick based on these numbers.
But you know what? All the charts we've looked at so far, I mean, it's indicative of the wider market. I think it's at the moment where everything's struggling a little bit. The sentiment is down, it's low. And I just think, you know, we're almost, looking at these charts, it looks like we're in a recession almost. It's that everything is down, you know? I mean, look at Morrisons there. I mean, Morrisons back in this time last year with £2.70. They literally a couple of weeks back in August, mid-August, they were down at 177, so almost a quid lower.
Yes.
So it's like everything's struggling. Obviously, it depends on what we look at, but I suppose you're looking at banks and supermarkets and all that. But yeah, it doesn't look very happy in a chart stand.
Yeah, well, it's UK domestic ink, isn't it? Yeah. And the fact that, you know, it doesn't matter what you think about Brexit and gubbins like that, everyone would agree that there's uncertainty. Some will think, obviously, you move one way and some the other in terms of an ultimate Brexit scenario. But it's uncertainty. And, you know, I think everyone would agree 3.5 years, whatever we're up to now in terms of the longevity of the Brexit debate. It's 3 years too long. And that weighs particularly on the domestic oriented firms. And there is no doubt Enbrown and Morrisons, the banks, they're domestically oriented. That's the harsh reality. So, you know, there's been a very clear play in terms of preferring international. And obviously the pound's gone down. So international earnings have been translated at better exchange rates. So, you know, you can see the clear splits in the market. The question, of course, for investors is what happens next? Now, you imagine a scenario where there's a little bit of Brexit clarity, whatever you think, you know, it doesn't matter which way you think is ultimately going to end up. Let's get the other side of something and then we move on into the 2020s. Is that slightly better? Is that kind of interlinked a little bit with what we've been talking about? Real value ETF and the movement of some of the banks and stuff like that. Just maybe it is. So, you know, interesting times. Yeah, yeah. But I'll tell you, if you want one final chart to look at today, and that would be British American Tobacco. So the tobacco company, obviously a well-known, big FTSE 100 name. Again, you know, you look at the chart over the last little while, and it's a bit mixed, isn't it? I mean, tobacco shares historically have been defensive counters. They're obviously big international earners. We all know that. So they should be in a good position. But as you can see by the BAT share price over recent years, yeah, it's struggled a little bit. I mean, they haven't had a good last, you know, couple of years or so. I mean, what is it? The shares are, what, 50 quid odd, weren't they, back in 2017? Yeah. And now they're looking at 31 pounds.
56 quid in June 2017, and literally in December or January this year, 24 quid they hit, but now they're at 31. So again, another chart battered down. I do feel, I know the market is massively abroad, but I do feel like, you know, regulatory, they're up against it, aren't they, in long run, you know? And I think, okay, maybe yeah, several years yet, but there's always going to be pressures then, anti-smoking, you know. So I think we are just genuinely getting healthier as a you know, for people individually and environmentally. We, you know, all that kind of stuff is heading in that direction. So they're against the grain, really, aren't they?
Yes. Yeah, no, I would agree. I mean, they're not, in terms of if you were looking for longevity, deeply environment and social governance oriented plays, you could do a lot better. I think for investors, I mean, moving on to the moral dimension, clearly that is important for some people. I respect that. Personally, for me, it hasn't stopped me investing in tobacco shares. I'm not a smoker, so, you know, I'm happy to invest in the space. Make of that what you will, I guess. But my observation is, you're right, but as a legal but addictive product, you know, they can be a very interesting and cash generative player, as obviously the sector's proved to be over many years and decades. More recently, the key has been actually trying to change products. Obviously, progressively, there's a move away from cigarettes into newer forms of delivery, be it vaping, be it new style e-cigs and stuff like that, which are not without their own controversies, but potentially open up new and different markets. The other aspect is, of course, the industry is consolidating. A couple of weeks ago, you had two other big names, Altria and Philip Morris, potentially come back together. They used to be one company. They were split up, but now maybe they're investigating coming back together. BAT has obviously been acquiring brands as well. Reynolds in the States, for example, you know, in recent years. So there is a consolidation game. And linked with that, today, the new CEO of BAT, he was made the CEO a few weeks back, announced a big cost-cutting plan. So they're talking about reducing management layers and basically costs. And, you know, there's a few stories about what percentage of the workforce it might impact. But actually, from a shareholder's perspective, it sounds actually just the right sort of thing they should be doing. As you say, a mature industry with a product which is coming under, well, it has been under regulatory pressures for many for a long time, but it's coming under new regulatory pressures and focus, looking to cut costs and find ways to keep up their dividend payment and cash flow profile. So shares are up 2.5% today on the back of that, which is no great surprise because, as I say, shareholders would naturally like that sort of thing. You know, that's the sort of thing which supports the dividend yield and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Marvellous stuff. Is that it, Chris? Anything else?
That's it. Yeah, no, sort of we're in that kind of middle ground of earnings season at the moment. Not too much going on, but yeah, there are a few stories I've come across this morning.
Yeah, I just feel at the moment we're just almost in a sit and wait pattern, you know. And this Brexit thing is doing my head in. Really, is I just wanted to go. I just feel like I was thinking, there's no way to get away from it. How do I get away from it? I can't even get off this planet, you know. It's like it's everywhere. I'm sure, even if you go to the deepest, darkest, and you know, parts of the Amazon, and you start bothering with the tribe, they'll probably bring up Brexit or something. I just think it's everywhere. It's all consuming, and it's wearing, you know. And I think it's having that effect of just grinding the market lower, and everything's just, nothing's exciting at the moment. Just everything's waiting, isn't it, for something to happen? You know, I just feel like that.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, investment doesn't necessarily always need to be exciting, but certainly it's something which dulls the backdrop. And, you know, ultimately, I think biggest picture, even beyond potential Brexit evolutions and everything else, you know, it's been a quite amazing last 10 years on global markets. And certainly to anticipate a little bit less excitement in terms of absolute returns over the next 10 years is possibly prudent and reasonable. But of course, half the thing with investments is that you've got to stay in the game. Because what's the alternative? Money in the bank pays you very little. Money in bonds, very little. You can have a bit of gold and other stuff, and we all know things like classic cars and artworks and stamps, you know, can be all over the place in terms of their valuation. So it's prudent to save some money for obvious reasons for your later years and whatnot. Back to the wonderful world of the stock market. It can be exacting and at some points a bit head in hands, but it's certainly not boring.
No, well, do you know what? I did a video recently about why, and I want to do a series on for people who can get access to the stock market, because that's where the best returns are, without having to do individual research on. It's basically looking towards funds and stuff like that, but going from the basics. And I start off by saying, so why invest? First of all, why invest? Why invest? And I go through the options, and they look. The ONS said from 1985 to 2017, pretty much inflation runs at about 3.87%. Average, that's close to 4%. So if you put your money in a bank, you are effectively losing money, you've got to try and find a better yield, almost than 4% on average, and you can only do that pretty much consistently in the stock market, so that's the way forward, isn't it? It's the only game in town, pretty much. Of course, it beats everything. I mean, even property. It beats property, and if you reinvest dividends, but you can also play property via the stock market, so it just makes a lot of sense,
Yes, no, I quite concur. Stock market is a great route for longer term kind of exposure to potential additions to your wealth. But you've got to accept there will be volatility and everything else, and obviously a little bit of knowledge goes a long way.
Mm-hmm. Marvellous stuff. Preaching to the converted, here we are, Chris. Marvellous. We'll catch up next week, Chris, all right?
Sounds plan. See you soon.
Time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They're at five, Bidstack Group, BIDS. At four, Agronomics, ANIC. At three, UK Oil and Gas Investment, UKOG. At two, i3 Energy, it's i3E ticker. And number one, most followed companies, Rambler Metals and Mining, RMM ticker. Up 1.89%. That's the only one, I think, in that list. Up, yeah. It's a hard market at the moment. It really is. It's almost a holding pattern, but almost planes moving down, into really landing patterns, or formation. But they're losing altitude, basically. That's what shares like at the moment. A holding pattern, but a losing altitude. It's hard work. Okay. Top five most liked RNSs are as follows. Cora Gold Limited, interim results. At four, Amerisur Resources, interim results. I always stumble on that one. Amerisur. Change your name, guys. It's not easy to say, okay? That will help you a lot. UK Oil and Gas, drilling and testing update. At two, Ark Minerals. Further drill results up to 2.79% copper at whatever that is. And number one, most liked RNS, is from UK Oil and Gas. Horse Hill granted long-term production consent. UKOG ticker there, of course. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.